If you've got a Bible, we're going to go to the very famous, probably if not the most famous, one of the most famous psalms in the entire Bible, the 23rd Psalm. My grandmother, we got her, my uncles or somebody got her a carving of this that hung in her house. I remember it so well. And so this is a very well-known psalm. We're going to read this one today. We're having a conversation about our souls, which I think a lot of people, and I'm having these great conversations outside of church about this, I think a lot of people underestimate the impact that the world has on our souls and the importance of our souls to us. This is, the Bible kind of puts it this way, all that is within us, bless the Lord, all my soul, all that is within me. So our inner selves, our internal and eternal selves, our spiritual selves. The Bible talk about our heart. Sometimes when it talks about the mind, that's what it's talking about. So your mind, your will, your emotions. It's your soul. It's the part of you you can't see and you can't measure, really. And there's no diagnostic test or app that can tell you how your soul's doing. And so this is a consideration of that. And so I think we've had a good conversation so far. We're going to go another couple weeks. So today is going to be a continuation of that and conversation about our soul. So Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil. For you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You have anointed my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and loving kindness will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Forever. So beautiful. I mean, there's a reason why this is like the most famous, popular psalm. It's beautiful, and it's one written by King David, and it's one of his psalms. It's a beautiful depiction of what we talked about last week, and that is having a calm, quiet, leveled soul. I mean, he's lying down in green pastures. You don't do that when you're stressed out, you know? When you got a lot of plates spinning, you don't go laying down in green pastures and walking by still waters. It's amazing. I didn't mean to do this, but I'm reading this, and it just, I wanted to kind of clarify. The Lord is my shepherd is a beautiful foreshadowing. This is speaking of Jesus, the shepherd. And so we've got this beautiful depiction of Jesus, and then this idea that his rod and his staff comfort us. Historically speaking, as a shepherd, a rod would be something not to hit the sheep with, but to get rid of wolves, and it was a weapon to protect. And then the staff was, you've seen Little Bo Peep holding the thing. It's the little crook hook at the end, and so when sheep fall into a chasm or you know, kind of some place where a cleft of a rock they can't get out of, you would use that to pull the sheep out and rescue them. So when it says his rod, his staff comfort us, that he protects us. He saves us. There's a beautiful GIF. I'm going to say GIF. Some people say GIF. Those people are wrong. Don't trust them. They're wrong. It's not peanut butter. It's a GIF. Okay. And there's little video things that pop up on your feed sometimes. There was one of someone pulling a sheep out of this crevasse. And the sheep gets pulled out and like prances off three steps and falls right back into it. And the person that posted it said, this is basically God rescuing me every 5 minutes. And it's a depiction of God's inner. So that's who God is being described as being in the psalm. It's beautiful. I want to back up, if I could, to the previous psalm. Psalm 23 gets a lot of press. Psalm 22, not as much. And I want to go back, and I just want to read the first two verses. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but just the first two verses. And I want you to notice the contrast between the two. Here we go. Verses 1 and 2. My God, why have you forsaken me? Far from my deliverance are the words of my groaning. Oh my God, I cry by day, but you don't answer, and by night I have no rest. Huh. Same author, one psalm different. Just consecutive psalms, 22 to 23, same author, same writer, same person, very different tone. Very, very different perspective. It sounds familiar because, of course, Jesus said the same thing from the cross. He was quoting, really, this psalm. My God, why have you forsaken me? And so over 1,000 years later, Jesus is saying the same phrase from the cross that David writes here. And very different tone. The emotional swing between these two psalms is pretty dramatic. I mean, to go from my God, why have you forsaken me, to I'm laying down in green pastures, you're like, what? I think, if I'm honest, it's a pretty accurate depiction of what my soul goes through on any given week. It's pretty accurate. I think a lot of us can relate to this, where one moment you are absolutely stressed to the hilt. I mean, you're just absolutely in over your head. And then for whatever reason, some things transpire, some things happen internally, and you're like, you know, God's good, and it's all great. It's a pretty good, accurate depiction of life. But if we're really dissecting this and looking at this objectively, something happened. Something happened between Psalm 22 and 23 that was pretty tremendous. And there's a phrase that David uses that I think is part of it, and I want to kind of, I really want to zero in on it today. And I think this is part of why there's such a big swing. He says this in the 23rd Psalm. He restores my soul. That's what's happening. Somewhere between Psalm 22 and Psalm 23, his soul's being restored. Psalm 22 describes someone who feels lost, abandoned, hopeless, restless, steamrolled by life. And then you get Psalm 23 that is a beautiful depiction of someone whose soul is being restored by his Creator. Like God's doing some spiritual surgery internally for David. Sign me up for that. That sounds fantastic. As we've talked about through the series, it's a pretty common assumption that that peace and calmness, stillness, rest in our souls. We believe, and this is just human, we believe that that is something you earn as a result to peace and calmness and stillness happening outside of us, circumstantially. So the belief is, I'll feel the way that David does in Psalm 23 if everybody around me would stop being knuckleheads. Like, this car ride would be peaceful if the kids in the back seat would stop fighting and be quiet and enjoy the mixtape that I made for the road. Stare out the window. That's the belief. And I don't know that we talk about that. I don't know that that's something that we say. But it's certainly something we all feel and we all think. We honestly believe that the turmoil that's happening on the inside of us, if we could fix the circumstances, if we could get out of the circumstances, the situation that we're in, then it would automatically alleviate the pressure, because life happens from the outside in. And as we've read throughout this entire series, 3 John 2 says, no, 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 no. You prosper on the outside as your soul prospers on the inside. Life is inside out. Our soul is connected to the wellspring of life. Life doesn't so much happen to you, it happens from you. So what we're talking about here is peace that passes understanding, that is bigger than the circumstances outside of us. Psalm 23 is evidence of that. To revisit what's being said here, a leveled soul, calm, laying down in fields and walking by streams, and life is good. But what does David say? Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. That doesn't sound appealing. That's not Dollywood. That's like, we're talking about like hell on earth. Though I'm walking through the worst circumstances imaginable, I don't have fear. I'm good. I'm comforted. I'm happy. I'm at rest. And then he says, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. He's got enemies. Do you got enemies? Maybe you do. But he's got enemies, people that want him dead. He's like, you give me a table. I get to eat chili in front of my enemies. I don't even care. Haters gonna hate. Just shake it off. Am I right, Tay-Tay? Okay, enough of that. He's walking through the valley of the shadow of death. He's got enemies who despise him. But yet, he's got a noticeable lack of fear, and there's calmness and rest instead of anger and bitterness. And something's happening on the inside of him that is bigger, more prevalent, more real, more tangible than even what's happening outside of him. So it's not inside, outside in, it's inside out. Now, personally, candidly, I spend a large percentage of my schedule thinking and worrying about circumstances, things that I'm facing. There's a lot of, if there was a pie chart, I don't have one, I should have made one. If there's a pie chart, I would have a little sliver that is orange that says time I'd spend not worrying, or that would be the assumption. Now, the rest of the pie chart would be time I'm worrying, but really, if you look closer, the big pie chart is blue, and it says time that I'm worrying about things, and then the little sliver, the little piece of pie, just says the other time that I worry about things, but in orange. That makes no sense to you. I don't care. It was funny in my brain. All right. Don't worry about it. Sometimes I just preach for my own entertainment and amusement. I spend a lot of time worrying about circumstances. I internalize everything. I process, overprocess, reprocess everything. Last night we gained an hour of sleep, and somehow I walked away with less sleep than ever. I got an extra hour, and I slept like 3 or 4 hours less than I usually do. Why? Because there's no off switch on la cabeza. I can't find it anyway. I think about circumstances a lot, and I try to process, I try to understand, but ultimately I'm trying to figure out how to fix them, how to repair them, how to bring them to a place where I'm comfortable and I can be steady. And in those moments, I sound a lot like Psalm 22, and I don't sound anything like Psalm 23. I'm not laying down in green pastures, thank you very much. Grass stains, hello. Bugs, itchy, no. Walking by still streams of water, I can't be doing that. I got stuff to do, man. Is there Wi-Fi out there? I spend a lot of time talking like, thinking like, acting like Psalm 22. I just do. God, where are you at, man? I may not get as mad as what you're seeing depicted here, but the questioning's there. Now, sometimes I get that mad, but a lot of times I'm just like, God, I don't know where you're at. You are missing in action, and I need you, and I'm not doing good, and I don't know who's got your attention, but can I have a little bit? I love this take on prayer that was written by C.S. Lewis many years ago. And it's been one of my favorite kind of angles on what prayer is and does for us. This is what C.S. Lewis said. I pray because I can't help myself. I pray because I'm helpless. I pray because the need flows out of me all the time, waking and sleeping. It doesn't change God. It changes me. Huh. I haven't kept really good records, if I'm honest, but it seems to me that after nearly, in 3 weeks, it'll be 48 years of life. More often than not, I pray for God to change my circumstances. That is most every one of my prayers. Is God, can you please change this, move this? I need this changed. And honestly, theologically, as a pastor, let me go ahead and say this so you don't go questioning otherwise. I think those are great prayers. Do that. I mean, Philippians 4 tells us to pray like about everything. In everything, pray. So pray about it all. And so in no way am I saying don't do that. But I will say this. And again, I haven't kept really great documents or records, but as far as I can remember, my recollection serves me this way, most every time, what ends up changing, at least first, and most prevalently, is my perspective, is my focus, my mind, my will, my emotions, my soul. It seems that most every time what happens first and sometimes only is that I'm changed. And I think that's where we get frustrated with prayer. Like, God, you haven't changed the circumstance. It's like, well, hang on a second. He's doing surgery. You're hopping off the table. Just stay put. Just let God do God's thing. He goes to work on my soul. The statement that David uses, that he restores my soul, is that process. And if you go to the original language, what it's painting a picture of is God continually refreshes, revives, renews, energizes our soul. Those things keep happening. God is continually refreshing, reviving, renewing, energizing our soul. It's like a vacation that really takes. And I know a lot of times they don't, because you get back and you're just as frazzled as you were when you left. But I'm talking about one of those vacations where you actually really feel rested and reinvigorated and ready to take on whatever challenges come your way. It's like really genuine rest. You feel rested. You feel renewed. You feel ready. I'm an introvert. And I know that that's surprises some people because I don't act like one. I'm what a comedian once called a site-specific extrovert, which means I can kind of fake extrovertness when I need to. But being an introvert means what energizes me is being by myself and being away from social situations. That's where the battery is recharged. Extroverts, they plug in the charger to social situations. And so what drains them is being alone. What drains me is oftentimes just being around people nonstop, which is a funny career to choose. It's God's sense of humor, right? But I love it. I love people, and I love interacting. It's not that I don't, but I will say this. Being an introvert, I like being invited to things. Like, it makes my heart happy to be invited, but I immediately start thinking of excuses on why I can't go. Sonia's got a thing. Sonia's like, I don't got a thing. Yes, you do. I usually blame Sonia. That's my out. That's always my out. Man, I would go because I love you, but Sonia doesn't like you very much, if I'm honest. She doesn't like many people. She barely likes me. There's one invitation that I'm all in for 100%, and I would cancel all my plans for. And that invitation is one of my favorite verses, a couple of my favorite verses in the Bible that Jesus makes to all of us. Matthew 11, 28 through 30. This is his Evite. This is his Facebook event. This is his invitation to all of us. He says, "Come to me if you're weary, if you're heavy laden, I'll give you rest." And he says, "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. And I'm gentle, I'm humble in heart." And then this is the promise. "You will find rest for your souls. Because my yoke is easy, my burden is light." That's exactly what David is talking about in Psalm 23. He took God up on this invitation. That's what's happening. He restores my soul. He brings rest and renewal. He brings comfort, energy to my overwhelmed, beat up, battered soul. Are you weary? Are you heavy laden? Just think about that for a second. Are you worn out? Are you burned out? Are you tired on the inside? And are you heavy laden? Do you feel like the world and the feelings and the thoughts are too heavy? Yeah. I think we all feel that. And just a sidebar, we all got our phones. We're all on these things too much. I think everyone would admit that. I don't think that anyone was designed to be able to receive and process bad news every 30 seconds of their life. I don't think any of us were ever designed or meant to try to process, here's some horrible things that are happening all over the globe, and just get hit with that like every 5 seconds. Send of the world as we know it. It's too much. And everything feels dramatic. Like no one comes up and says, you know, this is probably no big deal, but everyone tells you everything like, oh my God! And their hair's on fire, and they're screaming, their eyes are huge, and it's like the paper tray's empty in the copier. It's like, okay, can we take it down 4 notches, please? I know that we're not meant for that, but for whatever reason, it's like we're gluttons for punishment. We're just SpongeBob SquarePants as it relates to soaking in negativity. We all feel it, we internalize it, we process it, we gotta have opinions about it, I gotta have a stance on this, I gotta make this my whole thing, and it's like this has become my thing. And we take ownership of all these things. Meanwhile, our soul is like, I can't breathe. It's too much. And here's Jesus saying, does your soul feel that way? Here's what I'm offering. Come to me, and I will give you rest there. Not just rest in general, not a good night's sleep, rest for your souls. This is a really good invitation. This is the one invitation I never make excuses for. I'm interested. I'm in. And there's two very important components to this invitation that relate to what we're talking about today. Rest for our souls. Jesus restoring, reviving, refreshing, renewing, energizing our souls. And then also, Jesus in the same verse is saying, I'll teach you how to live a productive, fruitful life with or from a restored soul. To me, that's the tricky part. It's almost like, okay, for me to experience rest in my soul, I have to unplug from circumstances and go back to Psalm 23. No, you don't. You can still be skipping through the valley of shadow death. You can still eat Culver's cheese curds in the presence of your enemies. I went there the other day. You can tell. I waited 7 hours for a burger. Not worth it. Anyway, Culver's, sponsor of the church. I want to read this same verse as I read, but in the Message translation, which is one of my favorites. Just describes it so vividly. It says this: are you tired? Are you worn out? Are you burned out on religion? Come to me, get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I'm not going to lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. Yes, please. Freely and lightly. That sounds fantastic. Rules, regulations, religious activity all lead us to a tired, worn out, burned out soul. Keeping up with religious demands, jumping through religious hoops, trying to perform your way into heaven, it burns you out. This is why you have so many grumpy Christians running around. Because it wears on you. And then they get really offended when they hear another Christian who says that they're a Christian, they love Jesus, and they feel freedom in Christ, but they're wearing a My Bloody Valentine t-shirt to preach in? Jeez. They're not wearing the proper attire. They're not saying the right phrases. They're not listening to the right music. They're not acting they don't have the right disposition. They haven't memorized the right verses. Then we start grading other people's because we're so frustrated with our own deal. We're like children. When your sister gets a larger slice of cake than you do, her cake's bigger. She got the end piece with the icing. I get the middle piece. You start scorekeeping. Why? Because you're so frazzled and you're so tired trying to keep up with your own religious activities that you start getting frustrated and bitter towards other people who don't have to do it as much. Misery loves company. You get mad at people who aren't just as miserable as you are. Look at these Christians. They're smiling. Idiots. They're doing it wrong. That's ridiculous. That's the result of religious activity, religious dogma, just wearing you down. The Bible says that whom the Son sets free is free indeed. We're supposed to look, act, feel free. You are. There's an approach towards life that is not religious. I would say this, it's irreligious. You don't approach it trying to please or garner something or gain something. You approach life in such a way that you already have everything that you need. God's already forgiven you. Through Christ, we've already been made righteous. You didn't make yourself righteous. Therefore, you're not going to make yourself unrighteous. It's a work of Christ. You're free. When the Father looks at you, this is what he sees. This is my beloved child in whom I'm well pleased. You didn't secure that sentiment. You can't unsecure it. It is finished. Done. The performance review is over. As he is, so are you. Now you're free. You're free to be you. You're free to enjoy this liberated soul that Jesus has awakened in you. That's what this invitation is getting to, an approach that is productive, dynamic, fulfilling, and described by Jesus this way, free in light. You're free. You're light. You're not weighed down by the burden of religious activity, by trying to prove something to somebody. Who cares? This person's mad at me. Good. The Bible says love your enemies. You know what you can't do when you don't have enemies? Love them. Some of you guys need to get some enemies. Go make some. You can have some of mine. You know what having enemies in this modern age means? It means that you wouldn't conform. Enemies today just means you don't conform. And I'm cool with that. But you won't just mindlessly agree with me. Yep. But I'll buy you cheese curds. If you got 7 hours to kill. It's a life with a restored soul. You're free. You're linked and synced with Jesus. He uses imagery of like heavy labor to describe a free soul. He says kind of like, you know, oxen, beasts of burden. Beasts of burden. These big lumbering animals who do things that we can't, plow fields that we can't. And you put them together and you yoke them. The yoke's the wood thing you put around their necks. And then two of them, traditionally, pull a plow. And they do work. And he's saying, you want to do that? Now, normally that invitation would be like, pass. I'll be at Starbucks. Typing, that's easier. But that's what he's inviting us to, is come and don't just be yoked to somebody, be yoked to me. Now, I'm going to give you a horticulture lesson. Future farmers of America, this is what I know because I Googled it. Traditionally, you don't just take two adolescent oxes, yoke them together and hope it all turns out okay. What you do is you have an elder statesman ox, a mature, seasoned, the word would be presbyteros. That's where we get presbytery or Presbyterian. It would be elder or leader, or wise one. You would take the presbyteros ox and you would put them with a young, impetuous ox that has a hard time focusing, that is not really experienced and doesn't have much of a resume. You yoke them together, and the seasoned, experienced ox will keep the young ox on track, and before you know it, the young ox starts getting the groove. Oh, this is what we're doing. But look at that butterfly. No. Keep. We got something to do here. Jesus is the seasoned ox, and he's saying, come be yoked with me, and what that means is, I know you don't know what you're doing. And I know that you don't know how to do this in a way that's going to be healthy for your soul, but I do. And I know you're always taking more on yourself and internalizing more than you should. And I know you're over-processing, overthinking, and over-analyzing. And I know this world is taking a toll on your soul. But I know how to actually keep going, being fruitful and productive while taking care of you. And that's the invitation. And you're like, man, that just sounds like work. But then he goes on one step further and says, yeah, but I know it does. But my yoke is easy. And my burden is light. What does that mean? That means he is doing all the heavy lifting. He's got you. He carries you. He sustains you. He directs us. He leads us. He guides us. He comforts us. It's described in the Message translation as walking with Him is learning the unforced rhythms of grace. It's beautiful. One of my favorite phrases in the whole Message translation of the Bible. These unforced rhythms of grace, which if you grew up in religious circles like I did, it felt more militant, like a march. You're not keeping up. And this feels more like a dance that He leads. And we're getting swept off our feet continually in love and joy and freedom, because that's who He is. Jesus wants this for you. This is His desire. This is why He makes the invitation. He wants to be your source. He wants to be your strength. He wants to be your joy. He wants to be the lover and the restorer of your soul. He wants for us to sound like Psalm 23, not like Psalm 22. I'll close with this statement. It's the last one of the last lines in Psalm 23. Surely goodness and loving kindness will follow me all the days of my life. Follow me is not a good translation. It would be more accurate to say it this way. Your goodness and your loving kindness will chase me all the days of my life. Follow after me sounds passive. It's like, this dog followed me home, can I keep it? Chases us. Like is always, one author calls it the hound of heaven, chasing you. So, what if I forget to take Jesus up on this invitation? What if there's days, weeks, months where Psalm 22 is my jam? This is the song I've got on repeat. My God, why have you forsaken me? And even the psalm describes God as being far off. Is that the case? What if I forget to take Him up on the invitation? Well, I don't know how to. I don't know how to take Him up on the invitation. Come to me. I don't know how to come to you. Well, I think that's why this phrase exists in Psalm 23, because it's a reminder. He's chasing you. You don't even have to know how to come to Him. He's already with you. He's never left you. He's been on your heels the whole time. We just celebrated Halloween, and everyone watches horror movies. I don't, but I used to. And something that always perplexed me was in some of these Halloween, like scary movies, the villain was always this lumbering, like asthmatic kind of lumbering creature. And these track stars are like running through the woods, and yet somehow he's always like right on their heels. He's like, what are you taking, a shuttle bus? How are you right behind them? Well, not to compare Jesus to that. That's a silly comparison, Chris, but roll with me on this. Jesus is always right on your heels. You could be running the wrong way. The story of Jonah is all about someone that God will not give up on, and He will chase to the ends of the earth. That's us. We all get rebellious souls sometimes. We all got souls that run. I can't wait till my baby can walk. It's like, hold on tight. Once they're mobile, your life is now running and chasing. And that's how God feels about all His kids. He runs, He chases, and He'll never stop. His loving kindness, His goodness, His grace chases us, pursues us, all the days of our life. And his desire is to reconnect us, to rejoin us, and to restore us, to bring our souls back into alignment, to say, can I give you rest for your soul? Can I bring peace that passes understanding? Can I repair your damaged heart? Can I re-energize your burned out soul? Can I give you what you need to keep going, because you can't stop? This life is frenetic and you got to keep going, but you can keep going and still feel free and light. Jesus restores our souls.